Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Tyreek Stevenson did get on social media. He went on Twitter.
Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it.
And he posted this. To Chicago and teammates, my apologies for lack of awareness and focus. The game ain't over until zero hits the clock. Can't take anything for granted. Notes taken. Improvement will happen. Hashtag bear down.
Yeah, I'm not interested in apologies. I'm not impressed.
What about the bear down?
Save it. Go to TikTok.
What is the difference between TikTok and Twitter?
Dumb plays they attempted to run and various players they attempted to engage down at the goal line. What was that?
It's time to unplug the mini fridge. What we heard from Matt Eberflus post-game, unacceptably bad.
It's a one-yard play.
That was not just a one-yard call. You lost more than a game on Sunday. You lost the benefit of the doubt. Man.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Really down in the mini
fridge. Yeah, I know. You said unplug it.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw. Come on now. Everybody say it with me. Hashtag bear down.
Morning, Mully. Yes. Happy Tuesday. I'm still not buying the bear down stuff. Come on now.
We're on to Arizona. We're talking about Arizona
All right,
now.
Not yet.
Hashtag bear down.
No, we're not going to the Southwest yet. Time to still look back. We don't need to look ahead. Kyler Murray still will be there when we start to focus on that game. But there's plenty of rubble left to sift through.
They were a national laughingstock yesterday.
Yes.
I mean, we thought it would be bad. But it was the lead story on just about every national talk show, every national sports show.
They got the Jets and Cowboy treatment.
Did you see Tim Walz made a joke about it?
It's a national embarrassment.
He made a political joke.
It's a political issue. You now have the Bears seeping into the presidential election.
Well, it was always going to happen because of the trade deadline.
You knew that because they coincide next Tuesday. Big day. For the NFL and the country.
I mean,
that's such a weird thing, isn't it? Still,
it's just weird.
We digress. But yes, yesterday, a Monday, the day after the Fail Mary, whatever you want to call it, the day that the Bears blew their season, I think that the attention was unwanted but warranted. And it's not the kind of publicity you want to create or generate. The buzz surrounding the Bears is not a positive buzz right now. The vibes are bad. Matt Eberflus, boy, when you look at the Bears, they lost a football game. He lost the benefit of the doubt, and he's in danger of losing his team.
I got to tell you, it sounds like he's lost the team. I'm not joking. There are people openly questioning that guy that used to bite their tongue a little bit. And I'm talking about players.
Yeah.
Everybody had a thought on what they should have done, shouldn't have done. And it really, you know, I hate to repeat it, but yesterday we had a texter, Hail Mary, full of disgrace.
It is.
That's what it was.
A national disgrace. That's what it became. Everybody's weighing in on the Bears, and it's not good. It's not the kind of attention you want. It's not the Hard Knocks bounce seems like a very long time ago. Now they would not want to invite cameras in unless it was to record or document a regime change, because that's what everybody seems to want this week. Yeah, it's bad. And I think that Matt Eberflus did himself no favors. He made a bad situation worse by, A, refusing to acknowledge that they made a bad decision by allowing Terry McLaurin to gain 13 yards without resistance. B, the fact that Shane Waldron made a boneheaded decision to hand the ball to a lineman and third and goal from the one. Matt Eberflus still does not see that as a bad idea.
He bit his tongue a little. Grody kind of went after him about, so are you saying you would call that again? And he did a little bit of it didn't work. So he couldn't triple down mercifully.
This is not something that you hedge on.
No.
Okay.
I agree.
This isn't kind of, maybe kind of, sort of, in between.
He checked
a box. There is no gray area here.
He was also asked about disciplining Tyreek Stevenson,
yes,
and he seemed confused by the question.
Confused by the question, which tells me he has lost the plot.
Yeah.
If you don't understand why the quest for accountability matters to people outside of Hallis Hall, why you need to look strong as a head coach, then I'm not sure you are ever going to be a strong head coach.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you start him without any, I mean, you at the very least, you need to bench him to begin the game, and then you can go to him. But if you do nothing, you are going to look so weak.
I don't think they're going to do anything.
I think you have to do something.
Well, if it comes
and you have
now,
to do it, you have to do it publicly. You have to do something so that everybody knows that you sat up and took notice.
If the Bears do anything,
including the team.
Well, the team will be the one, I think, that ends up enforcing any sort of discipline against Tyreek Stevenson. DJ Moore's tough talk got more play than Matt Eberflus's yesterday, all right? Nationally, being weighed, the words he shared with us, what he said at 8 o'clock every Monday morning when he joins us.
Yeah.
DJ Moore addressing it in the way that he did gained more traction because it actually had some sort of indication that he was bothered by it.
Yes.
Matt Eberflus has yet to show that he was bothered by it. By my estimation, I think people want to hear from Matt Eberflus that loss, that
Listen.
Call, that day, that moment bothered him as much as it bothered everyone else.
You can't go on to Arizona right now.
No.
You need to do something,
no,
and you need to acknowledge the error that was made and the horrible lack of focus / discipline that one of your players showed. And you need to do it in a way that everybody knows that it's not acceptable, because you kind of make it appear like it's acceptable. And
well,
guess what? It's not.
By doing nothing, you are complicitly saying it's fine.
Yes.
Everything's fine. I want his boss to get involved if Matt Eberflus won't, because
yeah,
this is an organizational issue. This has become a national story.
You don't have to talk about it. You don't have to act like you do. But you need to bring him in after the first series. At the very least, you need to bench him to open the game. At the very least, you need to discipline him for
I think it's got to go more than that.
I'm not arguing.
That's a token discipline.
You need a token.
It's a token disciplinary measure.
If you do nothing,
yeah,
you're telling the entire league that you don't have control of your team.
That you're soft. That you're a soft coach. There's no doubt about it.
That's not a shame.
And you think that it should matter to him what people around the league think about the Chicago Bears and the coaching staff. I don't know if that's going to matter, though.
If you're only in the building, then look at what's going on in the building. You've got DJ telling us that the discipline has to come from,
yes,
from the team, which means there should be discipline coming. You got Kevin Byard. Oh, yeah, I talked to him. I told him I thought we should have pressed the corners on the play before, which he's correct.
And Kevin Byard correctly pointed that out publicly.
Oh, well, that's
yesterday.
What I'm saying.
Publicly.
Your tight end said, hey, you know, we're not taking things seriously in practice. I got to tell you, I don't know anyone that spoke that didn't say something that you couldn't turn into. This guy's losing the team.
Well, hold on. You're not done yet. Jalen Johnson on this station,
yes,
at 5 o'clock,
yes,
on Monday said basically that, you know what, things would have been better before the Hail Mary play had they called a timeout.
Oh, he flat out said,
oh,
that.
Oh, my gosh.
No,
he
question.
Said that it would be better had the Bears. Why didn't they call a timeout?
Yeah.
This is a player calling out his head coach. So you have several examples. And I want to know what it reminds you of, what it reminded me of. And this might be an unfair comparison, but it seems inevitable yesterday. When you hear one player after another publicly questioning the authority of the head coach, it brought me back to the Trestman era.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, this is the way, this was the beginning of the end. When things began to unravel in that dysfunctional 2014 season, you started to hear these kinds of things because, you know what? There was no respect. There was no respect from the players to the coach. And when you lose that respect, you lose a season.
Was that when Aaron Cromer did his tearful apology?
Sorry,
to Jay?
I didn't call enough pass plays. Yeah, it was.
Wow. That was rough.
What was that all about?
I'm sorry.
I told Jake Glazer everything.
He on the sideline told a reporter, this damn guy, whatever he said.
And oh, then, my gosh. I had thought of Eric Cromer in
I mean, it was
months.
It was, you know, and he was one of those.
But you know what I mean? Am I exaggerating?
Didn't he threaten a high school kid who tried to sit in his – I'm just saying. He was like a phony tough guy who broke down crying.
Yeah, he was a phony tough guy. Am I exaggerating that? Do you feel like that's a,
David, I think,
too much,
I
too
think
far?
Flusie, let me tell you something. When the time comes – when – the time comes where, and we all know you're hired to be fired, but this we have something high in the career obituary. We got a detail that will be included in the first or second paragraph of your career obituary right now. So yeah, you need to deal with it. You need to deal with it immediately.
That's why this was not just a game that the Bears lost on Sunday. This was a career landmark.
It was bad.
Yeah, and
you come out of that.
Is that the kind you wanted to remember?
And your
but
your,
now you're never going to forget.
Your post game was rough, and I felt when he was asked about disciplining the kid, he was like, "Well, what would it?" Like he wanted to know. You got any suggestions of how I would do that? He didn't say that, but I'm just saying his. Let's listen to what when he was asked the question.
We'll look at that again. Those things are always going to be internal as we work with our players. You know, as we go forward, and it's really about development, making everybody better. You know, so we'll get to that answer as we go through the week. And but again, he did address the team in a team meeting room today. And again, it was a really good moment for him to be able to do that. It showed responsibility and accountability.
Hashtag bear down.
That's ridiculous because nobody wants to hear how much growth Tyrique Stevenson experienced in admitting his failure in front of his team. I don't think that's enough, and I don't think Matt Eberflus sounded sufficiently bugged.
No, he didn't sound even remotely.
I want him to sound as ticked off as the rest of the Bears fans were yesterday when they were calling this station, when they're going on social media, when they were grousing around the house. I want Matt Eberflus just to sound a little bit perturbed. Is that too much to ask?
I just love the idea of grousing around the house. I know so many people.
You know what I mean?
Who couldn't get past that game.
I know.
I got texts from people
all
day.
Oh, my gosh, Molly. Everywhere you
go. I know.
You want to talk Bears.
Yeah,
I'm working out.
In
I'm in the gym. Yeah. I'm like, can you believe that?
I'm lifting angry.
and Flusie's just like, yeah, you know, I would have run that play again. What?
Oh, that was
Are you
madness.
Kidding me?
Yeah.
He doubled down on the mini fridge?
Yeah, no, I mean, he didn't. He kind of like, listen, he comes across, you know, he had a really nice hard knocks.
Yeah, that was a nice moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he comes across pretty weak right now.
He definitely comes across pretty weak right now.
Yeah.
He actually comes across like the character you saw in Hard Knocks. He is portraying a head football coach in the NFL. But he's not really convincing. Is
he doesn't realize
he's acting.
He's got a kick me sign on him, and he better figure it out because everybody wants a
boy.
Get
I tell
a boot on that.
That haircut's handsome. That
you know,
beard's pretty manly.
I was looking at him yesterday, and I was thinking, when's the last time the guy had his haircut?
He's a little trim.
No, I want him to need a little trim.
I want him.
I think his manicured look might want to, you might want to rethink it.
I want him to look like an NFL head coach and sound like one too.
That's what you want.
That's what you want. You want your head coach in his third season. We are not talking about a first year head coach.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You know, you're less forgiving when people have experience. They should learn from their experiences.
Instead of telling the media, well, you can ask him himself when he speaks to you. You can say, well, you can ask him when he's done with his 12-mile run. He's out there. He's got 700 push-ups and sit-ups.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that. Tyrique Stevenson, not to pick on him, but this is the week to pick on
him. Sure.
If he addressed his team, that had to be somewhat difficult because at least he faced up to his mistake. But the way that it was dealt with the Chicago media, that was the easiest out that he ever could have been given. That was a Zoom session. You didn't have to face anybody. You didn't have to really deal with many tough questions. That was lame. It was lame.
I mean, I'm not
face the music.
I felt the same way. There's no repercussion other than the Bears as a national laughingstock. Yeah, the only repercussion is hashtag bear down.
Bear down.
Well, and you know what?
Here's
the reality is And this is something to always remember. You know, you're not in the building. You don't know what people have said or what's going on. You do not as a member of a fan base or a media corps, even if you're in the guy's immediate family, you have no idea if anyone has said something to him, if he's caught some grief, if there was some kind of fine or something from the play. I don't know what it would be, but this is nationally a terrible look, George. If you're paying attention, Kevin Warren. If you're not paying anyone's bail.
We need to get to that.
We'll get
to that at some point. Good. Because that's you talk about an optic problem.
Yeah, there's an optic problem.
But my point is
simply that someone needs to intercede and make sure that you don't look like a laughing stock. You don't look like the weakest team known to man. You don't look like a team that has a coach that everything's open, everything, whatever you want. The inmates can't run the asylum.
I totally agree, and that's why I invoked the name of Ryan Poles. It is his job to handle his coach. And it's more than just optics right now. You have a season slipping through your fingers quickly. If you haven't already lost the players, you're in the midst of doing that. Somebody needs to step forward and reassert some sort of hierarchy, authority, control.
There's none of that.
There really doesn't seem to be any because of the examples you cited. We'll talk about them throughout the show, whether it's Cole Kmet, Kevin Byard, Jalen Johnson, or whoever.
Yes.
You can't let your coaching staff lose the control to the extent that they have lost.
And those are the guys that made public appearances, right?
Even on,
I'm just saying.
Right.
You got to wonder what everybody is thinking, right? You got to wonder what's going through the minds of this team.
DJ Moore.
And you better find out if you're in charge of the program, because really the old losing two games and one loss, that you had a game won and you blew it and you threw it away and you willfully seem to do that. You better make sure that's not two, because you know what? Starting in whatever your last eight games, you're almost at the halfway mark.
You're halfway through the season.
You're the win total of the teams you'll be facing over the last 8 weeks of the season is 42-18.
You have the toughest schedule remaining.
700%.
You have 700%.
70%.
I know. It's a lot.
I did the math and it came up as tough.
Math is hard.
There's a point somewhere.
There's a decimal point somewhere.
But you know what I'm saying.
It's a very good point. It's very valid to make it now. We are midway through the season and they have the toughest remaining schedule in the NFL. That should be enough impetus to
70%, man.
70%.
It may as well be 700.
You need somebody to step forward and make an impact, do the right thing, toughen up your football team, toughen up your rhetoric. It's okay to be tough with these guys. They're professionals. They can handle it.
Well, they crave it, okay? Because they're in the NFL. They're in football.
Yes.
And they've gotten it their whole lives. And you do not want to give a pass to people who make egregious errors and pretend like nothing's gone wrong because, well, the guy, this is a second-round pick. He's a
no
really
doubt.
Talented player.
I agree. So that we'll get to the Bears. We'll continue to talk about what's going on at Hallis Hall and the dysfunction that is beginning to fester. But yesterday was last night a sports equinox. I love that term. All four professional sports on the same night, the only time this year. What in the world got into the Bulls? Blackhawks
Bulls,
even won.
Bulls knocked down shots again.
Was that crazy to watch?
That's happened twice in four games.
But twice, the other
and
two
they
games,
are,
they were terrible.
And they are a 500 team. I'm just saying.
But I'm saying the other
when
two games.
When they knocked those shots down, and now what did they hit last night? 25? They hit 21 and now 25?
They tied a franchise record.
Wow.
They tied a franchise record, and they were hitting from all over. Zach LaVine was feeling it.
Zach was feeling it. If you look at the numbers, like just for instance, Io, 2-for-4, right? That's 50%. Josh Giddey, 2-for-4.
He almost had a triple-double.
I know, but I'm saying guys were hitting a high percentage of three-point shots.
Yes.
That you don't consider really three-point shooters, my point.
That's a good
point.
And
the three-point shooters were knocking down 3 points.
I like it because it seems like when we talk about the impact of coaching, Billy Donovan has, in a way, forced this style of play on a roster that may or may not be ready for it, right? They may or may not be ready for all the three-pointers that they're asked to take, but they are adjusting and adapting, and it's hit or miss. And for two games, they have hit, and for the other two games, they have missed. This and now they're 2-2.
Do you want my theory? This is my theory.
What's your theory?
My theory is that they can't hit a three-pointer, and that gets into the scouting report, so nobody defends it, and then they hit a bunch of three-pointers.
Yes.
So then everyone's like, we got to stop the three-pointer, and then they can't hit a three-pointer. So everyone says, don't even bother.
So basically,
and then they hit. So every other game this year, they're going to knock down shots, because every other game, you're not going to get to a point where people decide, maybe we give it a
half. They're not going to commit to stopping the three-pointer because they don't really trust your ability to
hit.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of like us because we don't know what to expect either. So the league doesn't know what to expect from the Bulls. Neither do we. Watch anyway. Listen to the Bulls. They're fun to listen to. They're great to watch. And when they're hitting threes like that, you're like, whoa, boom. Whoa, so, boom.
Hey, 0 for October is turned into 2-2.
2-2.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they have the Magic tomorrow night at home. The Magic coming off a big victory over the Pacers. Bancaro had like 50 last night, right? I think that was huge.
First 50 of the season.
That's a big guy coming in to stop. The Bulls won't play much defense, but they might be able to shoot their way out of it anyway.
That's
Giddy almost with a triple-double.
I saw that.
That's crazy.
I watched the game. It was like I was watching football, and I was going back.
I know you didn't want to watch that game.
You didn't want to watch that. Well, I watched some of
you
it.
You didn't want to watch Russ. I know that.
I you know what I did watch is I watched the Manning cast.
Was Belichick on?
He was on.
Okay.
And they brought in Lawrence Taylor. So, I mean, I was really having fun.
Was Belichick on again?
Oh, he was on.
Is he a regular?
He's a regular. He does that every week.
What is the deal with him?
They signed him up. They love him.
I didn't know that.
And Peyton loves, like, Eli wanted to show this and then would show a play the Giants made against New England. He does that every week.
Was Tim Walz on with the Manning cast, or did he say that in Wisconsin? Okay. Losing track of my guys here. There's a lot that was said last night.
Yeah. That Tim Walz thing was kind of funny.
It was very funny.
We're going to leave it all on the field, unlike the Bears.
He was in Wisconsin.
Tim, man.
Speaking to a bunch of Packer fans.
Wow.
And that's what you do. You're a politician. You pander. You play to the crowd, and he did it well. So we had the Bulls. We had the Hawks won.
The Hawks won.
The Hawks went to Colorado.
The Hawks won 5-2.
Oh, my gosh.
They got a couple empty netters, my friend.
Yes, I know.
For those paying attention at home.
Got to love the 5-2 victories, the empty netters, because it boosts your stats.
Yep.
And then we had the World Series, which looks like it's over.
World Series over.
Disappointing.
Dodgers 3-0.
Yeah. I just wanted – I picked the Yankees, of course. I wanted it to be more competitive.
Yep.
I just can't believe it's this one-sided. Michael Kopech is within one victory of getting a World Series ring. Think about that. Let that settle. And the White Sox are close to getting a manager, apparently. I wish we were on TV right now. We're on Twitch. Mully's face is classic.
He's got the bitter beer face.
Bitter beer face.
I'm following your instructions. I'm stuck now. Can't move forward. I'm thinking about that.
Okay.
Which part?
About Kopech getting a World Series ring.
Who are the White Sox going to hire?
Someone with an immaculate inning.
We can move on from Kopech.
Well, I don't think they're going to hire. I'm concerned that Venable is the guy they want, and he's down in Miami.
Will Venable interviewing for both jobs, the Marlins and the White Sox? Which is a better job?
Well, I mean,
Chicago or Miami? Marlins or White Sox? Which would you prefer?
I just can't get past this whole bloody Kopech thing you got on my mind.
I'm sorry. I put that in there.
Yeah.
You see nothing but a man bun.
Well, he's not going to start tonight.
He's going to get the final out in the World Series. You can just imagine that. And you're going to, I mean, Sox fans, this would be the ultimate torture. Sorry. Indulge me for a moment. You had to see Chris Sale celebrating on the mound with the Red Sox, and now you're going to be left with the image of Michael Kopech getting the final out for the Dodgers. That look is great.
Mully and Haw, we got the pick six next on The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Tyreek Stevenson formally apologized to his teammates on Monday morning, telling the media,
"I let the moment get too big, and it's something that, you know, can never happen again and won't ever happen again."
What's your take on Coach Eberflus declining to say what, if any, punishment would be forthcoming? Eberflus said T.J. Edwards wasn't spying Daniels, but assigned to cover the running back, Austin Eckler, who stayed in pass protection, and Stevenson responsible for guarding Noah Brown, who caught the TD pass. Does Eberflus need to discipline Stevenson? Should he do it publicly to preserve his own reputation?
Yeah, I think I wonder if Matt Eberflus understands the optics of this thing. I really do. I mean, I understand he's a football coach and he has his way of going about things, and he's going to look at preserving his relation. I wonder if he understands what this looks like and how this is going to damage him in terms of his coaching reputation if he sits on his hands. I feel like you've got to show some sort of focus as a coach. You've got to hold people accountable. It's not about whether you like somebody or whether you don't like somebody. It has to do with, you know, not about development, but about repercussion. There are, in life, there are repercussions for actions. If you do something, you're going to get yourself in trouble. It's that simple. And I think it's crazy that we live in a world where you think as a head coach in the NFL that you can get away with not with this, just kind of moving on and figuring, well, it'll all go away. It won't, man. These are little chinks in the armor. And you can't have that because the armor protects you. So I think it's very important that he do the right thing, which is to discipline this guy. And he needs to do it so that other players see it, so they get the message too. And he needs to do it, sadly, now, so that everybody knows. I mean, again, if you don't start the guy and you bring him into the game, you're still being a nice guy, but you're saying that, you know, you're still playing him, you're not suspending him. And I don't know how bad the punishment should be, but he has put himself in a position now where I feel like if he does nothing, then he just looks weak. And frankly, there's not a lot of future for weak NFL coaches.
I agree with what you're saying, Mully, but I already think it's too late. Now I feel like it would be public pressure is what is going. Like this should have been done yesterday. And he could have said, "I'm not going to tell you what the punishment is, but you need to trust me that there's a punishment and he will never forget that what he did was wrong." The other person that I would like to hear from, and I want to give the guy credit. We hear from Ryan Poles quite a bit compared to his predecessor. But, you know, it would have been Ryan Poles coming down and talking about the culture. They're big on culture. That was a checkmark against culture, what happened on Sunday. It would have been nice to hear from him. He could have sat shoulder to shoulder with his head coach and said, "We've got this. We've addressed it inside the building. It's none of your damn business what's going to happen." But he will never forget this moment. And then, okay, I could have accepted that. This is one where I don't think we need to know. And maybe it would be being benched, and we would see that at the beginning of the game. That's okay. He doesn't need to tell us that now. He doesn't need to give the Arizona Cardinals that tip that they're going to suspend him, not bring him with on the airplane. But he should have done that already, and now I think it's too late, and it would be caving to public pressure.
Well, they need to cave. If that's the case, they need to stop worrying about those things. They need to make a statement that will be respected by the rest of the locker room. Right now, at this point, it might be too late to reverse the tidal wave of negative opinions about or perceptions about how weak Matt Eberflus is as a head coach. But you can still make Tyreek Stevenson a healthy scratch and make a statement without giving the Cardinals any sort of indication that you are going to do that if it matters. Because right now you have a credibility problem and deficit if you're Matt Eberflus. I think a lot of us have keep waiting for him to assert himself in a way that maybe wishful thinking. This may maybe not who he is. Some guys are just very good coordinators in the NFL coaching ranks and not very good head coaches. Matt Eberflus is leaning heavily in that direction. He needed a show of strength yesterday, and he was weak. I would have been fine with Ryan Poles showing up and reminding people what the culture is at House Hall or what they want it to be and why they won't tolerate such behavior. Look, the flower, as we call him, he didn't wilt when Romeo Doubs did something that was detrimental to the football team. They suspended the guy who was part of their big, big part of their passing game. That was strength. That's what a head coach does in the NFL. Matt Eberflus said, well, you know, he talked to the team, wishy-washy Matt Eberflus. That is who he is right now. He's got players questioning him publicly. He's got I wonder about his support internally, but he doesn't feel strong enough to assert that kind of authority, and he needs it right now. This is the most important week of Matt Eberflus's head coaching career, because if he doesn't view it that week, it won't last very long.
And that's the big question, right?
That's Brad Biggs. He'll be here at 7. Biggs time. How should the Bears approach their left tackle situation? Braxton Jones expected to be week to week with a knee. Is rookie Kieran Amagaji from Yale and Hinsdale Central the answer, or just an uncomfortable question?
I don't think he's ready. I don't think Amagaji looks ready for prime time. I think he was pressed into action. He was active, so he had to play, and he was exposed. Now, we can overstate the significance of the block he made on the run around the edges, and he got out on the perimeter and he blocked the cornerback twice, and that was fine, and he had a moment, and there were other moments where he did not look overmatched. But if you watch the tape, slow it down, and you see there, pass protection remains a problem, and I don't know what the Bears do about it, because they've got to get people healthy. You can't just go out in the trade market. There aren't left tackles just waiting to be obtained or acquired for draft capital or other players. That's not the way it works. I think you're going to have to be practical here. And practically speaking, is Larry Borum healthy? Can he be activated? If not, can Matt Pryor swing over to play left tackle and you slide in somebody at right guard? Then you might maybe think, okay, I would rather go back to Nate Davis in all of his reticence and mystery. I would rather go back to a veteran who has done the job before than a rookie who hasn't. And I think that would be probably plan B or plan A, however you want to categorize it. But I don't think plan A should be Amagaji. I think that he would be a guy that still needs some development, and that was obvious on Sunday.
Yeah, I think if I'm in charge, I'm putting Matt Pryor over there for a week. He's probably your best option. He's a mountain of a man. Then the question becomes, do you take David's guy, the mini fridge, and do you plug him back in and have him take over at right guard because you're moving Pryor out to left tackle, or is it Nate Davis? And boy, what would it say if Doug Kramer was in there playing right guard and Nate Davis was the backup? Because I think Nate Davis would have to be the backup, because you'd need to have somebody in case the center goes down, and then you got to move Kramer over there, and Nate Davis could also, I think, get away with a couple of snaps at center. But all of a sudden, then Nate Davis is your swing inside guy.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is real simple. You move Matt Pryor before he became your right guard was your swing tackle. So you move your swing tackle back to left tackle. Borum can be his backup for a week, see if he can get better. Where yet with Bates? He needs a couple more weeks, whatever. Nate Davis is my starting right guard. That's it. You're back, you're active, and you're starting. You better do the job. Nate Davis had one foot out the door, okay? Nate Davis was on what we like to call Velus Jones watch. I think he'd have been cut by the trade deadline. Maybe they're hanging on to him to see if they can get any kind of movement. I don't think they can. But he's got no future with this team. So now he's got an opportunity. Now he's back in the starting lineup in my team. And the other thing is, I don't know if I'm not sure if Tevin Jenkins is ready to go.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're going to see an injury report. So you may, you know, if you want to move Doug Kramer, if you want to figure out if you can bring back Larry Borum, you might need him to play quickly, too.
If Doug Kramer starts at right guard, who is the fullback on third and short?
That's just so mean.
Nate Davis.
Hashtag bear down.
Because everybody's pretty much asking the same question.
That's the voice of Coach Wanstead. He'll be in studio with the guys 7:40 to 8:20. Did you like hearing safety Kevin Byard reveal he had a conversation with Matt Eberflus about both the defense on the Hail Mary disaster and the defense on the 13-yard completion, the play before? Byard said he personally would be in favor of pressing the cornerback on the first play, and if they go vertical, it's still a pass of about 10 yards short of the end zone.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, things happen the way it happened. Could we have sent pressure? Maybe, you know what I mean? But he made the call, and, you know, that's what it was.
Do you like what you heard there from Kevin Byard?
I thought Kevin Byard made a lot of sense. I think he'd make a good defensive coordinator. I think that that play, that giving them 13 yards was idiotic. And if you heard, apparently Flusie's thinking was that if you defended them on the 13-yard play, they would just go deep anyway. They would just go vertical and they would try to throw the ball. They go for a Hail Mary on that play. Well, isn't that a lot better than a Hail Mary into the end zone?
I can't fathom what he was meaning.
It was
nonsensical.
But it made zero sense. If a guy catches the ball on the 20, how's he going to get past everyone? I mean, and let's say they decide to go vertical. Certainly your corners can stay with them. And if the guy catches a 61-yard pass, didn't they tackle him the last time?
Yes.
I mean, I just, the logic of Eberflus was nonsensical. That's where the game was lost. You needed that to happen so that you could get to the Hail Mary, but it took misplaying the Hail Mary as well. So, yes, I think we know, do not let the quarterback run around for 12.8 seconds before he unloads a pass. And maybe have your players aware of what is going on. A timeout there, you could have had a moment where you were, all right, wait a minute, guys, here's what we're going to do. And instead, you let them get that 13 yards to set up the big throw, and now the rest is history.
Yeah, you can't take the timeouts with you. So him leaving the field with three timeouts, pretty bad look. And then being defiant, pretty bad look. And he said right away, and it's got to be tough. I sat there and thought, wow, how tough of a job does Matt Eberflus have right now? The game ends the way it ends. He has to go in and address his team quickly. Then he has to get out there and address the media. That's not easy. And kind of wrap your mind around it and not sound. You got to compartmentalize everything that just happened. And he said, if I remember it right, he said they were defending touchdowns, right? They were defending against the touchdown. But the other problem with that is that it was a 3-point game at that point, right? And a 50-yard field goals nowadays are kind of like chip shots in the NFL. So you were even potentially willing to give up enough yardage that they could have lined up.
That was my initial worry watching the game.
That they could have lined up for a game tying
field goal. Thinking that's what they were trying to do.
It wasn't like, if they were up four, I could have maybe been on Eberflus' side, but not calling timeouts in that situation was stupid.
Well, Byard didn't necessarily allude to that specifically, but I agree with you, Dustin. The lack of a timeout was an egregious error. That word's coming up a lot this week. The fact that Matt Eberflus defended the idea of not having more tighter coverage and essentially surrendering, giving up, inviting the Commanders to gain 15 yards. It was only 13, but it allowed Jaden Daniels. This is the simple math and the failed logic, and I don't understand why Flusie keeps reinforcing this. The ball traveled in the air about 65 yards, and when it came down, Noah Brown was in the end zone.
Yes.
If you move that back 15 yards or 13 yards, he's not in the end zone and conceivably could be tackled short of the goal line. Do you remember years ago?
DJ Moore, didn't he catch one at the end of the game on the 1 yard line?
Yes, but also
halftime of a game this year.
And you remember Kevin White, the first round draft pick against the Patriots years ago, about 5 years ago. He caught a Hail Mary and he came just short.
Yes.
These things happen because every yard matters. You can't surrender yardage like that and just be okay with it. It was terrible in terms of planning for that. It was worse when he defended it.
Yeah.
It was a bad decision. Kevin Byard is saying what everybody in Chicago is thinking, and good for him.
Molly, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's Jared Payton. He'll be here at 9. What should we make of Cole Kmet saying this about the Bears' practice focus last week?
I think it's a really a good lesson for everybody to learn from in terms of how to respect the game. And I think we had examples of that throughout the game and quite frankly, throughout the week of practice this past week where, you know, there's moments where maybe some guys lay off here and there. And those are the type of things that can happen when you do that for just a split second. And, you know, it doesn't always come to bite you in the butt, but when it does, it hurts. And that's the unfortunate and I would also say beauty of this game is that, you know, you disrespect it in a certain way and it'll come to haunt you in some form of fashion. So I think it's a learning experience for everybody. We all play with a lot of passion. Tyreek plays with a lot of passion and we all love him for that. But there's definitely a respect level of the game and knowing that you got to finish it out until those double zeros at the clock.
Some guys lay off here or there. Wow. Heavy words from Cole Kmet.
Terrible indictment of the entire organization. Paging Ryan Poles. Your culture is infected with lackadaisical attitudes. That is what's happened with the Bears. Somehow, they got full of themselves during the bye week. Somehow. Their 4-2 start made them convinced that they were ready for prime time. They're not. This is still a losing football team, a losing football culture, a losing football organization. They know how to lose better than they know how to do anything else. And now they're going to manufacture their own adversity, and they'll overcome it and maybe win a game and give themselves credit for it. You know what that is? That's the Bears' way. Cole Kmet talking about giving voice to acknowledging the fact that the Bears didn't practice hard last week, because why? They barely practiced at all. The Players Association has made it so they barely practiced during off weeks. This was honesty from a guy that is now very candid and a great spokesman for that team. This is a problem. Do you think that the math on the Hail Mary and Tyreek Stevenson, they're all problems, and this is as big as any.
Well, I appreciate what all these guys say as a fan and as somebody who works in sports talk radio. But if I worked for the Bears, I would hate this. I would hate how open these guys are being. These guys are really taking you into Halas Hall, which they do not want us, the fans, or us, the media, to know about what's happening. They want to keep their business in-house. That's what they want. And I'm sure that's going to be addressed come Wednesday when they get the whole team together. Like, guys, come on. Like, this is not helping. We need to circle the wagons. It's got to be about us versus them. Keep, you know, the players are now adding to the outside noise. They're supporting what we are saying by saying this. We thought something was wrong. They're telling us that there is something wrong. We now just don't think it. According to these players, we know it. That's a problem.
Listen, this is a real problem. This organization needs to sit up and take notice, because this is the group that had to get rid of not one, but two coaches a year ago. And they told us that it's proof of how great their culture is that they got rid of people. And then it turns out they only get rid of people. They don't discipline people. If you disrespect the game, then you're going to feel it, and you better know about it. If you're on the practice field and you're cutting corners, it was amazing to talk to Olin and Pat about this stuff in the postgame, because part of what they're talking about, part of what a culture is, you're a veteran player and you see a guy that isn't paying attention while you're doing your whatever 100 walkthroughs of the of the defense for a Hail Mary play. And you say to the guy, hey, did you hear what you're supposed to do? Tell me what your job is on that play. You're not paying attention. That's what you do. Culture is calling out people when they're not doing things. Culture is going into the weight room, and if someone decides, well, it doesn't matter if I do 9 reps instead of 12, who cares? There's no one watching. Your teammate sees it. Hey, finish your reps. That's what the culture is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, well, look at us. We're 4-2. We beat a bunch of bad teams. We're on fire. It doesn't matter if I pay attention. I got to tell you, you know, Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, whoever, you better listen. You know, Dustin, you might not want to hear it. And I'm sure they hate it, but you need this information because this is what's going to fuel the coach's firing. And I hope he understands that. You know, you want to keep your job, you better sit up and take notice.
Ask Mark Trestman.
Hey.
Anybody.
You know, I mean, let me ask you this. I don't want a coach to act like a fool. I don't want somebody to come out and be an idiot. But, yeah, I think I would prefer to see Nick Sirianni scream at booing fans than hear a coach say, oh, no, well, we did that the right way because we wanted them to have to throw a... No,
I know what you're saying.
That's nonsensical.
I don't know if I want a coach yelling at fans.
I'm not promoting that.
I think we both want to hear a coach that's bothered, seems bothered or perturbed by what's going on.
Yeah, don't try to sell me on how you did a great job getting back in the game. That's dead to me because you figured out how to lose it because you got a guy with his back to the play who's pointing at the crowd and yelling at people. Wake up now.
Different question on a different topic.
That's the voice of Mike Florio, 844. What did you think of the Bulls' performance in Memphis? Coby White, he's been streaky. You expect these wild swings to continue?
You know, I think the Bulls are a young team kind of figuring out how to play. I think they're playing a style that is keeping them in games. They went down. Did they go down 20 in that game? That was a blowout. Looked like it could be a blowout loss, but they kept doing their thing and they knocked down shot after shot. It was fun to see. They have played 4 games and they're 2-2. And I think after the season opener, we thought they wouldn't win in October. So I kind of like what they're doing. I think Billy's doing a great job. They got to figure out, I think maybe the rookie needs to go down to play in Hoffman Estates. I nearly said Rockford again. And I think that might help him a little bit. But I'm all for what they're doing. I think 2-2 speaks volumes. This is the same. This kind of follows the pattern of what happened in Milwaukee. It's a great win yesterday for the Bears. They got 2 wins on the road. Pretty impressive.
Let's keep in mind, like, John Morant didn't play. Okay, the superstar for the Grizzlies was not there on the court.
Look at you.
Okay, they did come back from 20.
Yeah, Zion didn't play, and they got blown out.
Thank you. That's my, like, I mean, okay, like, let's have some consistency. Zach doesn't need to score 30 every night, but I'd bet money that the next game against Orlando, he'll have 12 or less points.
Did you not eat breakfast today?
No way. I've had one of my two hard-boiled eggs. What do you mean? Come on, what? You
want they me to, have 25 of 50.
You want me to drink the red Kool-Aid this morning because they came back from 20?
Yes. Okay, great. Dude, you should be...
Dude.
Yeah, you should be the one celebrating them because you're the one who said they were going out for October.
25 of 53.
And you agreed with me.
I agreed, but yeah. I didn't come up with it.
But you thought it was a good idea enough to hit your wagon to it.
I was wrong. I said I was wrong.
No! 25 of 53 from three-point land. Dude. Zach LaVine is a bona fide NBA scorer. He can get buckets with the best of them when he gets hot. And I know for some reason, this is always going to nag me a little bit. I understand the numbers and people want to call him not a winning player, which seems to be a label that has stuck. But boy, Zach LaVine, he has done a lot in this town that has been underappreciated. I'm not going to say unappreciated. I'll say underappreciated. And when he goes on a run like he did last night, you start to ask yourself, like, why has this guy been mocked, derided? Like, guys who call him nicknames that he doesn't necessarily deserve. Good for Zach LaVine. Good for the Bulls.
Are you talking about Duke?
They are fun to watch, dude.
Max LaVine.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
How would you describe the World Series through three games? Was it smart to play Shohei Ohtani or not?
Apparently, he was wincing in pain. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Ohtani's playing hurt. Give him some credit. I think that this is the World Series. He's rising to the occasion. We're going to find out after the World Series. He probably dislocated something. And they is worse than we think, but give them credit for that. The Dodgers, boy, they're deep, they're talented, they're, I don't think, this much better than the Yankees, but Aaron Judge is in a deep, deep slump. He's going to hear about this all offseason and longer, and the Dodgers are doing everything right. They're getting good pitching. Freddie Freeman is on a tear. Five straight World Series games in which he has homered. That's going to get him into the Hall of Fame. So the World Series, frankly, has been a little disappointing because of all the hype. But let's hope it goes six, but I doubt that it does.
It's over. It's all over. World Series is done. It'll probably end tonight. Freddie Freeman is a MVP and a Hall of Famer. And Ohtani was like in that sling literally until like he went up to bat. He had his arm in a sling off and on, off and on. So kudos to him playing hurt. He walks in his first at bat last night, leadoff walk, and then two hitters later, Freddie Freeman, boom, out to right field, and right away it's 2-0 Dodgers. They'll probably win tonight.
This was a word I would use to describe it. Let's see. How about blowout? How about rout? How about non-competitive? God bless the Yankees. They were in the first game for a while. They've been routed in this series up to this point, and there's no way back in. There's not a chance that they're going to win the World Series at this point. And Freddie Freeman, you know, you said that just casually that he's going to make the Hall of Fame now. Freddie Freeman has hit a homer in, what, five straight World Series games? Holy cow. I mean, it's a pity that wasn't Anthony Rizzo. Then we could have a real conversation. It was a pity that he wasn't doing something spectacular. Instead, the conversation is probably, you know, will he play again next year? Certainly not with the Yankees, right? I think we're looking at...
Where's he going to play? Chicago?
No. Are you going to taunt me Dustin style?
I don't know.
That seems like where we're headed. Wow.
I'm not taunting you, Dustin style. I just got compared to Dustin, dude.
Kopech.
Oh, the Kopech.
Daddy Kopech over here.
Okay, sorry.
Am I just like a ball of yarn for you to knock around in your cat-like paws? God.
I'm sorry.
I'm so wounded now.
You gotta stop thinking about Kopech.
Maybe the Sox can sign a broken down back, you know, injured former Cub.
It'd be cheap.
All right, we got the extra point. Nice.
Sorry.
It's Mullion Hall on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullion Hall on 670 The Score.
What did you make of Jalen Johnson telling the Spiegel and Holmes show that he wished the Bears had used a timeout before the fateful Hail Mary play?
It was a rush situation when it didn't have to be.
Do you believe the players are comfortable questioning their coaches? Is that a good thing or a potential serious problem?
Well, Jalen Johnson was not asked a specific question about that. He volunteered the fact that he thought that things seemed rushed and they could have benefited from a timeout. That's a player empowered by what he sees, what he hears from his teammates. And frankly, he's empowered to say that and to be as candid as he typically is, because I don't think there is any fear of repercussion. I don't know that there's that much respect there. They can quibble with that. They can counter that with, oh, we respect our coaching staff and we respect Matt Eberflus. But the rhetoric on Monday did not reflect a team that is in lockstep in support of Matt Eberflus. This is where you start to see confidence eroding quickly. And this is the kinds of things you hear when it does. You appoint a leadership committee. What that does is it gets more people involved in leading this team, but it also gives you more skeptics. It potentially, in a week like this, gives you more guys to question what's going on and why you're doing what you're doing. I don't think you hear the same kind of rhetoric from players who play for Harbaugh or Tomlin or Andy Reid or Sean McVay. Guys who have earned the benefit of the doubt. Forget what we think of Matt Eberflus and his ability to coach or make decisions that matter and impact Sundays. What his players think is more important. And what we have heard from what his players think of him after the latest loss is a sign of trouble.
Well, what's interesting is, who do you believe is more at fault for the loss on Sunday? Matt Eberflus or Tyrique Stevenson? And based on all the audio that we've played and all the audio that we've heard that we haven't yet played, that we may play later, and the quotes we have read, things we've seen on X, I feel like the players have the back of their teammate, who I feel is more to blame than the head coach. They both have accountability issues. More to blame. They more have his back than they have their head coach's back. And that's where I think there's a problem.
Yeah, I think we can all agree there is a problem. And the problem is, when you don't win, when you lose, and when you lose in that fashion, then everybody has thoughts and ideas. And when you have running a program where you're kind of friend to all, you're giving them, it's like a thousand little things and little moments where you're allowing people to express various opinions and do different things that are now coming home to bite you. You know, players crave discipline. They want to be told what to do, how to do it. They want to push back from that. It's like children, really, in a lot of different ways. You know, you want to kind of control different things, but you got to give them roots and wings, right? You got to teach them your values and what you're after, but you got to let them fly when the time comes. And I think that players are obviously older and different, but there is that sort of avuncular relationship between a coach and players. And you get to a point where, as long as you're successful, everything's going well. But the minute that something goes awry, and in that particular instance, I think the coach had a bad game. I think the coaching staff had a bad game. I think that the deciding play of the game, though, was decided by Tyrique Stevenson. I think if he indeed was supposed to be the guy on 85, and what was he doing messing around when the play started, then he ran over and tried to tip the ball. He tipped the ball up. He tipped the ball to 85. He didn't slam the ball down. So I think it's hard not to think of him as responsible for that terrible play. He wasn't doing his job. He didn't do what he was assigned to do on that play.
But the next time you wonder if Matt Eberflus should have called a timeout before that,
or
you wonder about his judgment in game, know that you have company in your questioning.
Yeah, well, that's
the players are likely doubting him too.
This, as I said, this if he lets this go, if he doesn't look like an authority figure while all this is happening around him, this is just another dark mark on his coaching resume. And frankly, his coaching resume, they are 4-3 right now, as we mentioned. They've got a game in Arizona that's winnable, but then again, they never win on the road. And by the way, they've got a series of games in front of them where they're the most difficult schedule in the league. So you better get this together, and you better get a grip on it, and you need to get before the group and tell them, hey, all the second-guessing about that game, it's over from this point on. We are on to Arizona. And then discipline that kid so that it looks like you're not the guy that's just allowing tomfoolery to take place on your watch. That tomfoolery.
That tomfoolery, you got to watch him.
He's a bad guy.
He's back on the depth chart.
Tate Tavis is going to start. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. We'll be right back.
in that particular situation, you always know that they're going to do, you know, with 6 seconds to go at the 35, they're going to either go for the end zone there or just try to get more yards and do that. So if you want to play sideline defense, what they're going to do is they're going to convert to the Hail Mary right there and then just run everybody off the sideline. Then you got to pick them up from the sideline and do the same job that you're going to do in the Hail Mary. So, you know, to me, you know, we wanted to just bring them up so we wouldn't get a something that's too far down the field, which it was to the 48, and then we set up for our Hail Mary at the end.
Oh, so it worked then.
That's a bunch of football gobbledygook.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Who in the world believes that?
No one. Not only that, like, I mean, honestly, you know, when you foul up, you got to just say, oh, yeah, we should have done that.
We should have done that.
Yeah, obviously, the way it turned out didn't work, so we did something.
Players know,
too. Yeah. They know the doublespeak when they hear it. Eric is in Bedford Park. Hey, Eric, good morning.
Good morning, guys. See, and that's exactly what I was going to talk about. Everybody in the world, and all of the coaches, you guys, I'm sorry, the players and the fans, we all know, and I touched on this with the business aspect of interviews or post-game interviews. Nobody's stupid. We know what happened. Don't try to soft-coat it and sugarcoat it. That's BS. We know what happened. And when you do that, you lose the locker room, and that's what's going on. I appreciate the players, and especially Cole Kmet and the other guys that are kind of coming out. I know it's not good for the organization, but when you smell something that's BS, you call it out. This should have been addressed immediately. I can't even imagine coaches like Harbaugh, Bill Cowher, Belichick, Ditka. I'm not saying the trash people at the podium, but he should have said, this is going to be dealt with. It's going to be handled. We're going to go look at the films. And, yes, we are going to take a look at the positives. But this should have never happened, and we're going to address it. And instead, Poles is going to address players coming out. No, the bigger problem is it happened, and they won't address that.
Yeah, it's a good point, Eric. I mean,
thanks, Eric.
If you try your gobbledygook, everyone's going to know.
Yeah, you will be exposed quickly in the NFL as a leader if you're trying to sell people something that is really implausible. And what his explanation was for that play and defense was implausible.
Freddie's on the Odyssey app. Hey, Freddie.
Good morning, guys. Hey, listen, I got one thing to say. When was the last time we were 4-3? That's one. Mm-hmm. And number two, we're blaming this guy. Like, he's the, oh, my God. It wasn't even that. Who cares? We should have won the game, 21-18, whatever, because I'm blaming the coach and offensive line. Williams, the quarterback, was running around for his life for the first two quarters. How come in the second half, we don't put a tight end there, running back there, let's help the block? No, we continue with the dumb progress. This is all on the coach. This is not on that kid. This is not on this guy. This is on the coach. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Freddie.
Yeah, I don't think you can just ignore that impact of one play and one decision and the repercussions from that one bad decision. So, fair enough.
Bad as everything. They had the lead with 30 seconds.
They were
left.
Ready to escape Landover, Maryland with a victory. And then we'd be having a much different conversation this week.
We'd have a totally different week. Like,
wow, look what the Bears are capable of doing. Look what the direction this franchise is going. And winning masks a lot of ills, and it would have done that. But when they lose a game in the manner they lost it, all of the scrutiny is deserved, and be as skeptical as you want to be.
The Bears' offensive line, though, is a major problem.
It's a problem.
You lost three guys, and you were already without some of the people you thought were going to start. Caleb Williams was pressured, according to Next Gen Stats, he was pressured on 51.6% of his pass plays, and that pressure came on average 2.47 seconds. It is the most he's been pressured in his career and the fastest that pressure has come since he started playing for the Bears.
So that means he had the shakiest pocket to set up in, and you saw that for three quarters, and then the fourth quarter, it's almost like he calibrated and did what he could, but it wasn't enough.
312-644-6767. We have a lot of people to check in. We'll get to your calls. We've got Biggs time next. Our guy, Brad Biggs, football man of the Chicago Tribune, will join us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Oh, boy.